Welcome, everyone, to Heartbeat Theater. This is your host, C.P. McGregor, inviting you to be the guest of the Salvation Army for the next half hour. Cause and effect, say some philosophers, are the basic ingredients of life, indeed of the universe. But too often, we're concerned merely with the effect, leaving the cause, good or bad, to pursue its course. But if the effect is harmful, the cause must be investigated and corrected, as it is in our story, Hand on My Shoulder, written by Robert McKenzie. It's not meant to be morbid. It is meant to stimulate a little thinking, and since it comes on the eve of the new year, perhaps indicate a fresh beginning. And so, with Alan Hewitt as George Penrose, here is Act One of Hand on My Shoulder.
Mr. Penrose?
Oh, thank you, Miss Allen.
That letter about Mr. Cartwright's party's on top, sir. You wanted it out right away.
Yes, I see it. If my wife could only manage to handle our social obligations, I wouldn't have to bother writing these eternal notes. That'll be all, Miss Allen.
Yes, sir.
Just a moment.
Yes, sir?
You've got an erasure here.
Well, yes, sir, but you...
No buts, Miss Allen. Nothing leaves this office unless or until it's perfect. Will you type it again, please?
Yes, sir.
Oh, and as you leave tonight, will you leave this note on Mr. Cartwright's desk? I'm going out of town for a few days tomorrow, and I'd like him to get it first thing in the morning.
Yes, sir. Where can you be reached, Mr. Penrose?
I won't be available, Miss Allen. Just tell anyone who calls that, that I can't be reached. I had planned everything rather carefully. I left the office early and reached the house at 3:30. Both Ellen and Dad were out. I'd known they would be. I'd counted on it. I was packed in 15 minutes. Before I left, I reread the note I was leaving for Ellen and Dad. Tom Cartwright would get his tomorrow morning. Dad would read this tonight. So would Ellen. If she remembered to come home. It was short and quite plain.
Dear Dad, and Ellen too, if you're up to reading this, I'm afraid I can't take any more. I've tried for the last 10 years and had only the satisfaction of watching my wife become a hopeless alcoholic, and my son in disgust at both his mother's illness and his father's seeming inability to do anything about it, become a stranger in his own house. Ellen, I loved you once very dearly, but to me, love is based on respect, and I find I can't respect you anymore. I don't know what you feel for me, but that doesn't really matter anymore. At least, thank you for the good years we've had. My attorney, John Raymond, will contact you shortly and explain the settlement I've made. I think you all will find it more than fair. And it's signed, George. Ellen.
I think I knew he'd gone when I came home tonight.
Ellen, what do we do now?
I'll like George to leave a note. Perfect ending. It always had to be perfect for George, didn't it? It never was.
But Ellen...
Nothing was ever right for him, was it, Dad? Always picking, finding fault.
Oh.
Always looking at all the corners of our little lives for... dust and cobwebs and dirt.
Well,
picking and prying and pushing until he found what he wanted. A crack, a split, a mistake. What did he think he was, God Almighty?
Now, don't you talk like that, Ellen. You don't know what to say.
Oh, yes, I do. I was the one he always trapped. It was always my fault. I'm the one who always cracked. I'm the one who couldn't take the pressures, who couldn't come up to the mark. Well, I'll tell you something, Dad. I'm glad he's gone.
Ellen.
Oh, don't look so shocked. He made all of our lives miserable with his little tin god act. You and me. He's driven my son out of the house. Well, I'm glad he's gone. I'm glad he's gone.
Ellen, honey, please. Please, now, you must.
Oh, George.
Ellen, I...
George. I tried, Dad. I really tried.
Well, I know you did.
Couldn't he have tried a little, too? What can we do?
We can pray, Ellen. Pray that you can still find the strength to beat this thing, that the good Lord will find George wherever he is. Try to set him straight. And above all, to bring him back to us.
I drove for hours, I suppose, because it was dark before I relaxed enough to start looking for landmarks. I could find none that were familiar. Evidently, I was in mountain country. The air was sharp with pine and fir, and there was considerable snow on the shoulders of the road. And it was cold, very cold. I was beginning to worry a bit when I saw the lights of a filling station up ahead.
Be with you in a minute. There. Help you, sir?
Yes, where exactly am I?
Where are you? This is Highway 79.
Oh, yeah. Fill it up, please. High test.
All right, you are.
Hey, whereabouts on 79?
You go straight ahead 5 miles, you hit Big Moose Lake. Back the other way at 40 miles, Acton.
Ah, thanks. Took a minute for the names the man had mentioned to register, and then I realized I was almost 100 miles from home.
There we are. Everything's full up, mister. Can I check your oil and water? You need antifreeze?
Huh? Oh, no. Everything else is fine, thanks.
Oh, I see. Well, that'll be $3.45.
Yeah, right. Here you are.
Thank you. I'll get your chains in a minute. Oh, you got chains, mister? Ice on the road up ahead. You're gonna need them.
No, that's all right, thanks.
All right. Give it in a sec. Here you are. That was $3.45.
Right.
54. And 5.
Good.
Look, I don't mean to worry you, mister, but you sure about those chains? There's some nasty curves.
No, thanks. I won't need them. Thanks very much.
Okay, mister. You know best. Well, do nothing else. Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas?
Yeah. Next Tuesday. It's, Hey, you all right, mister?
Oh, yeah. I guess I'd forgotten. Yes. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. I had forgotten. But then for a long time now, Christmas hadn't meant very much to me. Or to Ellen. There had been a Christmas Eve 10 years ago. I suppose Ellen had been well on her way to becoming an alcoholic even then. But I didn't see it. I guess I never really saw Ellen at all. There was a face, a voice, a style. There was an Ellen to suit the occasion, that was all. And the fact that she drank a little too much at parties was then a minor annoyance to me. But an annoyance nonetheless. I remembered that one Christmas, Ellen made me a promise. The first of many. There.
Hi. What was all that grunting and groaning I heard in here?
Oh, I was putting George's train together. How does that look?
Oh, that is the most beautiful electric train in the whole wide world. Really, George?
Please, Ellen, not so loud. You'll wake him up.
Oh, don't be a poop. He's sound asleep. He can't hear anything. You all through now?
Yes.
Good. Come on, have a drink with me.
No? Oh, really, Ellen?
Well, what's the matter with now? This is one of the few times you've bothered to come home from the studio. I think that's worth some kind of a celebration.
Oh, what kind of talk is that? Look, it happens to be important to me and to you, too. When I spend as much time as I do at the studio, I want things and I'm going to get them. One of these days, I'm going to be at the top of the heap down there, and that takes work. Lots of it. Long hours and hard work.
George.
What?
Can I make a deal with you?
Oh, forget it. Come on, let's go to bed.
No, please, George.
Well, all right, what is it?
Honey, if you promise not to work quite so hard and come home a little more, I promise never to have another drink. I mean it, George.
Ellen.
Honey, I really mean it. Please, we need you here.
Ellen, I've explained to you why it just isn't possible right now. What more?
Listen to me, George. This is important. What's happened to us?
What do you mean?
It didn't used to be like this. We loved each other. We were happy with each other. We used to do things together. Now I never see you from one week to the next. You leave early, you come home late. We don't talk to each other. We don't go anywhere. We might as well not be married.
Oh, Ellen.
George, I need more than this. I'm serious. I'm slowly going out of my mind. Can't we do anything together?
Ellen, I've put in a hard day and I'm very tired. You've got to get up early in the morning. Now, please, come to bed and let's forget all this nonsense. Please.
All right, George. I'm coming. Merry Christmas, George. Merry Christmas.
The road was getting worse. The ice was quite bad. I slowed down a little. My mind was still on that Christmas with Ellen. What had gone wrong? I tried to give her everything she wanted. What more was there? Well, that was 10 years ago. No point in thinking about it now. 10 years ago. I suddenly realized I wasn't paying enough attention to the road. And too late, I looked up to find my headlights centered not on the road, but on a snowbank and a huge black tree trunk.
That was Act One of Hand on My Shoulder with Alan Hewitt as George. It's almost a new year. And in the usual tradition, we'd like to offer three resolutions for your consideration. First, if you're enjoying Heartbeat Theater or have any suggestions about it, drop a card to the station. They're bringing it to you as a public service, and they'd like to know you're interested. Next, give the Salvation Army all the help you can this year. They'll appreciate it. Finally, treat yourself to the best New Year possible. Make it one that counts. Now, Act Two of Hand on My Shoulder with Alan Hewitt as George.
Well, good morning. How do you feel?
Terrible, thanks. Where am I? What is this place?
You're in my cabin, 20 miles into the hills from Big Moose Village. And in my opinion, lucky to be alive.
What happened?
Just lie still, son. You went off the road and into the tree last night about 100 yards down the highway. I heard the crash, went down, and pulled you out.
Oh.
Lugged you back up here and called the doctor down in the village. He patched you up.
You brought me here?
Don't let the white hair fool you, son. I'm stronger than I look.
Well, I guess I owe you my life, Mr.
Shaw. Major Lionel Shaw.
Major?
Oh, that's right. Salvation Army. Retired now, and you don't owe me a thing, son. Thank God. He's the one that spared your life.
Yes. But these splints, what...
Driver's side of the car buckled in on you. Broke your left arm and leg. The rest of those bandages are mostly cuts and bruises.
Broken? Well, how long will I be here?
Oh, probably about a week or so. Doctor will be up in a day or two for casts, as soon as the shock wears off.
Oh.
Incidentally, I called your home last night, Mr. Penrose.
Mr.? Oh, of course, my wallet. You talk to my wife, I suppose.
Matter of fact, I didn't get an answer. I thought I'd try again this morning.
No. No. Don't bother. Wouldn't do any good. Thanks, anyway.
Just as you say, son. Well, how about some breakfast?
Well, thanks, but Oh, look, I can't impose on you like this.
Right now, you don't have much choice, and it's no imposition. My family's gone, I'm here alone. And you're no problem, believe me. I'm happy I can help.
Well, thanks more than I can tell you.
Yeah, it's all right. You in some sort of trouble, son?
What do you mean?
Well, I don't want to seem like a nosy old man, but in my 40 years with the Salvation Army, I've seen a lot of people with trouble. And you get so you can recognize certain signs. You've got them.
I guess I do owe you an explanation.
Son, you don't owe me a thing. As I said, my work has brought me close to a lot of trouble. I found that talking about it usually helps.
Just what is your work?
My work is God's work, son. Salvation. Trying to help men discover God's grace through belief in the message of His Son, Jesus Christ.
Oh.
More than just words, son. A commitment to God's way of life is a belief in a way that promises and delivers untold benefits to the believer. An infinite peace of mind, for one thing.
Yes, I know. I've heard all that before. Sounds wonderful, but doesn't mean anything. Human nature is what it is. You can't change it.
How do you know? Have you ever tried?
Well, no.
I have. And it can be changed. I've seen it happen.
Well, maybe with the kind of people you Salvation Army people work with, but they're so far gone, they'll believe anything.
Mr. Penrose, when a man's as far down as he can get, that's one of the few times in his life that he can look at himself and admit to what he sees. He hasn't got anything to lose. And when a man can do that, he can be helped.
Yes.
Most people find that hard to do. Most normal people. They'll give you 1,000 reasons why they can't or shouldn't, except the real one. The fear of what they'd find if they looked.
Yes, I suppose that's true, but what's the point of looking if the picture is so unpleasant?
Because you'd see as well the hand of God on your shoulder. A hand that offers love, understanding, help, hope, offering a way to change that picture.
You really believe that, don't you, Major?
I do. I've seen it work 1,000 times. I know.
Do you suppose my wife would see that if she looked?
She would. So would you.
All right, Major. You talk about trouble. My wife is an alcoholic. A drunk, a plain, common drunk. We've dodged around it for 10 years, given it every nice or non-committal name we could find, but it still boils down to drunk. Not a very nice thing to call your wife, is it?
No, it's not. Alcoholism is a terrible disease. But it can be helped, even cured.
Oh, can it? Major, I have tried. The best doctors money could buy have tried. I don't know how much money I've spent on cures, doctors, medicines, private hospitals, everything. Nothing would work. It's ruined our social life, all but wrecked my professional career, driven our son out of the house. I did everything I could. Finally, I just couldn't take it anymore. Now tell me that God cares for a woman like that, or would want to help her if he did.
He does care, son, and he would help. But did you care enough yourself to ask him?
What good would that do? I told you, I bought the best care I could for 10 years. It didn't do any good.
What have you done besides spend money?
What?
Did you ever take the time to examine all the possible reasons for her trouble? Did you ever look at the problem in terms of your home life, your church life, what you both wanted from life and what you got from it? Did you ever consider yourself as a possible source of the trouble?
Look, Major, Ellen's got the problem.
It's just as much yours as her, son. Maybe even more. You've described a situation to me that I've seen again and again these last 40 years. One that we in the Salvation Army have found to be the root of practically every human problem we had to deal with. Lack of understanding of every human being's one great basic need, love. When this need is blocked, then natural expressions are blocked. They become frustrated, empty, and they look for something else to fill that emptiness. Alcohol is only one solution they find. Some people turn in on themselves and build a shell that no other person will ever be able to penetrate. Some turn outward and try hurting others to find that which was denied them. Some accept lifelong illness as a substitute and gorge themselves on pity instead of love. Some simply give up and die. There are some of the symptoms, but the cause is the same in every case.
lack of love.
What are you getting at, Major?
I think Ellen looked to you for love. And for those qualities which love fosters, respect, understanding, companionship. And I'm very much afraid you shut the door in her face. She wanted so little from you, and you gave her nothing.
You're saying that I'm responsible for Ellen's drinking?
In a large measure, yes. You think about it, and consider this. Ellen is still where you left her, and she's ill. You're here. You're going to have some time on your hands the next few days. You think about it. Hard. Pray about it. You might be surprised at the result. George?
Oh, I'm awake, Major. Come in. Would you turn on the light?
How are you feeling? Have a good sleep?
As a matter of fact, Major, I haven't slept a wink. I've had a rather unpleasant experience.
Your arm or leg giving you trouble, Tom? I can call the doctor.
Oh, no, they're fine, Major. I'm afraid it goes a little deeper than that.
Oh?
I've been lying here thinking about what you said this morning, and I finally got up enough nerve to take a good look at myself.
Uh-huh.
Well, you didn't miss by much, Major. I found a selfish, cold, egotistical man. A man devoid of concern for anything but himself. A man with a pretty mixed-up sense of values.
I see.
You know, Major, it's amazing how clearly you can see things when you're quiet for a little while. While I was lying in here, I could hear you out in the next room doing something and whistling to yourself, and I thought, oh, there's a happy man. And I wondered why. How could a man who spent his life dealing with the waste products of life, with the alcoholic and the poor, the sick and the miserable, how could a man in that kind of life find anything to make him happy? And then I did a little comparing.
Go on, son.
I produce motion pictures, Major. I'm associated with one of the largest studios in the world, some of the world's greatest stars. I spend millions of dollars every year. Two of my films have won Academy Awards. My office is three times the size of this cabin. I make a ridiculous amount of money in a year. I have a beautiful home in one of Hollywood's most fashionable residential areas, and I probably pay more in taxes per year than you ever made.
You probably do.
Well, there's nothing wrong with all that, Major. I worked hard, and what I've got, I think I've earned. But in thinking about it, I think what used to bother me was the worry that I hadn't gotten enough. I was successful, yes, but there was something lacking. I didn't know what it was. I'm something of a perfectionist, and this indefinable lack ate at me. I tried to ignore it, but that didn't work. Then I tried to escape from it, your expression, Major. I tried to cover it up by concentrating on making something else more perfect. I drove myself and everyone around me. I looked for faults that needed correcting, and if I couldn't find them, I'd invent them. I drove Ellen.
Go on, son.
She had to be the best of wives, the best of hostesses, the best of mothers. And when she made even the slightest mistake, I was on her like a fury. I wanted to create the perfect world in which there was nothing lacking. A place for everything and everything in its place. And that included my family. My father came to live with us, and he became the respected elder member of the family, and this was fine, too, as long as he just looked the part.
And did you create, as you say, the perfect world?
No, Major. No matter how hard I tried, it kept breaking apart. Ellen took it as long as she could, but no one of us is perfect, I've discovered, and since I couldn't or wouldn't admit this at the time, she found her own escape in a world that would. And I drove her there just as surely and inexorably as if I'd done it on purpose. Rather ugly picture, isn't it, Major?
Not so much ugly as pathetic, son. In a sense, it's the story of all our lives until we find God. Did you find anything else in that picture?
I think so, Major. I did something I haven't done since I was a child. I prayed. I asked God to forgive me my trespasses, if he could. And I asked him to help me, and Ellen, and our son. And I felt his hand on my shoulder. And suddenly, whatever it was that I'd been missing all this time, wasn't missing anymore.
What are you doing out of bed?
Well, the doctor told me last night that I'd better start moving around a little, so I thought I'd hobble out and watch my breakfast being prepared.
You keep that up and I'll put you to work on the day.
It's a deal. I, talked to Ellen last night.
Yes, I know. You're as bad as a teenager with a girlfriend. Everything all right?
Just wonderful. You know, she hasn't had a drink in a week and a half. Ever since I left. And she told me that Major Bronson called again, and she feels she's going to make it this time.
That's wonderful, son. I know she will.
Major, I owe you more than I can ever repay. I don't know how to thank you. Helping me as you did, calling Major Bronson, asking her to call on Ellen. All the help your Salvation Army has given my family since I've been here, well, I just don't know what to say except... thank you.
You don't have to say anything, son. You've said it already. You said it when you opened your heart and mind to God and let him have a share in your life. Everything else that happened has been because you and he worked together.
Yes, I know. You know, it's amazing. I've been shown a brand new direction.
Son, that road's been there for a long, long time. God's just pulled the weeds out of the way so you could see it for yourself. Now, how about some breakfast?
Oh, fine. This mountain air sure gives you an appetite.
Oh, it sure does.
Yeah, the doctor said I could leave tomorrow.
Yes, I know. New Year's Day. Ah, it's a grand time for a fresh start. Brand new year. Brand new life. Well, here's your coffee.
Major, if I can't do anything else, here's to a happy new year.
Happy new year, son. And God bless you. With his hand on your shoulder, this new year is only just beginning.
That was the final act of Hand on My Shoulder, starring Alan Hewitt as George. Be sure to be with us again next week for another Heartbeat Theater story. Heartbeat Theater is a presentation of the Salvation Army and is broadcast overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. Until next week, this is your host, C.P. McGregor, saying thanks for listening and a Happy New Year, everyone.